Welcome back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. Our producer is Robin Fly, and I'm Dr. Nurse Nancy. A Gallatin Valley friend and I just returned from a trip to Hawaii, where I learned some things about the history of the islands that were new to me. For any other history-minded tourists out there, today we're talking about Hawaii's ongoing illegal occupation by the U.S. Our guest is Dr. Keanu Sai. In the previous half hour, we talked about some of the crucial moments of what led up to the occupation of Hawaii. We had kind of gotten to annexation. Before we go on, Dr. Sai, you introduced me through your work to the concept of denationalization, which you point out is a war crime. Could you explain for listeners what denationalization means and how it played out in Hawaii?
One of the actions that are tied to a belligerent occupation of another country, if that occupying country wants to try to create their own view of the occupied state to be theirs, right? So during World War I in Serbia, the Bulgarians and the Germans were employing what came to be known as denationalization. Basically taking over the schools in Serbia as an occupied state and applying what is called Germanization, Bulgarianization, right? And they would force their language to be used in the schools, impose their laws within that occupied territory, violating the law of occupation. It was all done in order to achieve the result of what is called obliteration of the national consciousness in the mind of the children. Okay. So to obliterate the national consciousness came to be known as denationalization in 1919 by the victors of World War I, that they were going to use these war crimes to basically prosecute the Kaiser and German soldiers and Bulgarian soldiers, right? So that is what was created as a war crime called attempts to denationalize the inhabitants of occupied territory, which is to obliterate the national consciousness, meaning you had a plan to do that. There was a plan and a policy that was carried out. Okay, because that's why in order to commit the crime, you have to show intent, right? And the policy aspect basically shows that's intent because they're implementing what they know is illegal. So in Hawaii, that idea of obliterating the national consciousness goes back to a statement that was made on the record by one of the insurgents in 1895, Samuel Damon. He was a Hawaiian subject, but he was Caucasian. He wasn't Aboriginal. He was a Hawaiian subject. He wasn't American. But he was trying to act like he was an American because he wanted to join America. Well, Samuel Damon stated on the record, right? He said, if we're ever to have peace and annexation, the first thing we must do is to obliterate the past. Okay. Now, right there is a position taken by him as a member of the insurgency, okay, on the record. Now, the point here, though, is when was that idea implemented as a policy? And that would occur in 1906. And it was a program from the Department of Education that was titled Program for Patriotic Exercise to be used throughout all the schools throughout Hawaii. So they're going to change the minds of the children because they know they cannot change the minds of the adults. And they basically are hijacking the educational system, and they're going to use that as the means by which to denationalize. And during that denationalization, the implementation of that policy, which is my grandparents' generation, mm-hmm. you cannot speak the Hawaiian language, which is a national language, not the native language. right? It's like French in France. It's like Serbo-Croat in Serbia, right? This is Hawaiian in the Hawaiian kingdom. Everybody spoke Hawaiian. Now, they were bad at speaking the national language. They were forced to speak English, and all they learned was American history. That's it, right? And if they were defiant, they would be severely disciplined. In instances, beaten. Those are the stories that have been passed down, right? Now, by the time that brainwashing comes to my parents' generation, my dad was born in 1939. He attended St. Louis, okay? It's already institutionalized. He knew nothing about the Hawaiian kingdom. And then by the time it got to me at the Kamehameha schools, I graduated with my high school diploma in 1982. I didn't know anything, nothing at all. That is the effect of denationalization, obliteration of the national consciousness of an occupied state in the minds of its nationals. So what we have today is the evidence of the war crime, right? We are the result of denationalization. The fact that we cannot speak our own language, right? The fact that we didn't know what the Hawaiian kingdom was because we were told that America came and civilized us. A narrative similar to Native Americans. Mm-hmm. Nothing can be farthest from the truth. Mm-hmm. So denationalization is a war crime because it is a way to control the nationals of an occupied state. If you get them to believe they don't have a state, that get them to believe that what you had in the past was savagery. So our past would not be looked upon as good, and that we look at America as our savior. It's just complete ludicrous. But what's amazing is that this was done by Germany.
Yeah.
Not just in World War I, it also was done in World War II, mm-hmm. with the Nazi mentality. It was also done by Italy during World War II and was occupying Yugoslavia. They called that Italianization. Mm-hmm. They were called war crimes. So when you say Hawaii was never a country of its own, right? And that we're indigenous people, we're a tribal nation of native people. It's a way of not addressing the reality of what actually happened, right?
And
because
so,
we are a country, and therefore war crimes can only be committed between countries.
So I'm thinking then how, you know, sometimes when I bring this up in the past, much less educated manner than since I've read your work, but people have said, oh, but look, everybody in Hawaii voted to become a state, so don't worry about it. Everything's fine. As you talk about denationalization, I'm wondering about that vote. What can you tell us about that and about the legitimacy of it and how it reflected denationalization, perhaps?
Okay, so when we keep in mind, we're still being governed or analyzed through international law, not American law and not Hawaiian law, because Hawaiian law is limited to Hawaiian territory. American law is limited to American territory, but international law is a law between nations. That's why it's international, between nations. So what we have here is denationalization is a war crime under international law, not under Hawaiian law, not under American law, right? And it applies to an occupying country, an occupying state that is violating the sovereignty and independence of an occupied state by brainwashing the children on with a plan of ultimate control in the future. So if you can, the only way that you can silence, if you can silence the nationals of an occupied state, change the minds of the children, and then make it institutionalized, right? Now, when we then look at the Statehood Act of 1959, the Statehood Act basically changed Hawaii from a territory to a state of Hawaii. The Territorial Act was passed in 1900 by the U.S. Congress 2 years after Hawaii was supposedly annexed by a law. Okay. The problem is American law, according to the United States Supreme Court, and it's just basic political science in how we teach this, American laws have no extraterritorial effect. It has no effect beyond the borders of the United States. So the United States Congress, in passing the law in 1900, creating the territory of Hawaii, had no legal effect in Hawaii. It's just an American law, no different than the joint resolution of annexation, which is an American law. So in 1959, the United States Congress passed a law changing the name from the territory to the state of Hawaii. Now, the people who were participating in the voting, well, they were Americans and Hawaiians who believed it was American because they were denationalized. But if you take that out of the equation of denationalization, the Statehood Act of 1959 is just an American law being illegally imposed in a foreign country during occupation, which is precisely what Germany did in Luxembourg during World War II, claiming they annexed Luxembourg and Luxembourg was now German. Well, then when the war ended and the occupation ended, it's not like Luxembourg became a country again. It was always a country. And what Germany had done was illegal. You know, you can't restore something that was never taken away. Luxembourg was still Luxembourg, even during the occupation by Germany, when it's treated like it was German territory. The same thing would apply to Hawaii.
Well, at the beginning of this program, I introduced you, Dr. Tsai, as the chairman of the Council of Regency, the interim government of the Hawaiian Kingdom. And just in case any listeners are thinking, well, maybe this guy just made this whole thing up and gave himself a title, I'd love it if you could just explain a little about some of the national and international organizations that have affirmed that the Council of Regency is, in fact, the interim government of occupied Hawaii, the Kingdom of Hawaii.
Well, let's use precedence now. That way it doesn't look like I'm trying to provide some rhetorical basis for what I'm going to believe, right? So when Germany invaded Belgium during World War II, the Nazis captured King Leopold. He was taken prisoner. But Belgian nationals fled the country to London. And what they did was they formed the government in exile. They weren't elected by Belgian nationals because Belgium was occupied. So what they formed was, under their constitutional provision, was a Council of Regency. And a Council of Regency is a body, a legal body, that serves in the absence of a monarch, because King Leopold was captured. So this government in London was a Council of Regency serving in the absence of the monarch and basically being a watchdog, you might say, of the Belgian state and monitoring what the Germans were doing in violation of international law, which ultimately would lead to prosecution of war crimes, reparations after, right? So what we did was the same thing. Now, in this situation of Belgium, that is how a government can be restored in an interim way when it was overthrown previously by a foreign invasion, in this case, the Nazis, right? They restored their government in an interim position in London to be the government of Belgium, the occupied state. What happened in the Hawaiian Kingdom was very similar to what happened with Belgium. Our government was overthrown in 1893, and our queen was put in prison, right? And then when she passed in 1917, the constitutional system was still there, but denationalization had made it so where our people didn't even know Hawaii had a constitution, let alone it being its own country. You know, they were led to believe that we were savages and that Hawaii was colonized. Well, in 1997, we took deliberate steps to restore our government just as the Belgians did in London. And we have a provision in Hawaii's constitution that provides for a Council of Regency to serve in the absence of a monarch. So we were able to basically resurrect and restore that government as the successor to Queen Liliʻuokalani as the executive monarch. So we went ahead and did that. Now, the test is, well, is what we did recognizable under international law? Not that I need to go around and get people to believe us. You know, it's either legal or it's not. It cannot be anecdotal. It has to be based on legalities, Hawaiian law. And that's what led to a court case, an arbitration proceeding at the Permanent Court of Arbitration in the Netherlands, in The Hague, the Netherlands. So the Permanent Court of Arbitration was formed in 1899. The United States and European powers formed this court to resolve disputes so that countries don't go to war. But if they do go to war, because they can't resolve the dispute, then they follow the regulations of war. And that came to be known as the Hague Conventions, right? Which now includes the Geneva Convention. That's what regulates the laws of war and occupation. Now, there's a provision in the treaty that created the court, this Permanent Court of Arbitration, that it can accept international disputes, right, of parties, but one of them has to be a state. At least one of them has to be a state. And there is a provision in the subsequent treaty of 1907 that superseded the 1899 treaty that formed the court, the Permanent Court of Arbitration. Article 47 says that the court is open to non-contracting states, meaning states that did not sign that treaty. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. The United Nations is comprised of 193 independent states. Currently, you have 122 contracting states, states that signed the treaty and are part of that body that maintains the Permanent Court of Arbitration. So the balance of the 122 in the United Nations are non-contracting states. Well, if they have a dispute, an international dispute, they also have access to that court, which would form a tribunal to resolve their particular dispute. And that's called an arbitrational tribunal. Now, the Hawaiian Kingdom, our government was overthrown in 1893. This court, this institution was not established at that time. So we're not a party. We're not a contracting state. Well, this situation in 1999 would be presented where our dispute that we have with the national of the Hawaiian Kingdom that was alleging that the Council of the Regency is liable for the unlawful, for allowing the unlawful imposition of American law that led to his incarceration, right?
That I just want to say, this case is so important, this Larson case, and I had to read about it at least four times to really get a grip on it. I just want to remind our listeners that this is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. We are talking today with our guest, Dr. Keanu Tsai. Dr. Tsai, please continue. We were talking about the recognition of the Council of Regency internationally as the interim government of the Kingdom of Hawaii.
So when the dispute was submitted, now this case came to be known as Larson versus the Hawaiian Kingdom. So we're not the plaintiff in this case, we're the defendants. We are defending ourselves from the allegation that we are liable for allowing American laws to be imposed here, right? So it went, when the notice of arbitration was submitted to the Permanent Court of Arbitration by Lance Larson's attorney, okay, Ninia Parks, that initiated a process by the Permanent Court of Arbitration to determine and to verify whether or not the Hawaiian Kingdom meets the criteria set in Article 47 of the treaty that the court is open for non-contracting states, right? So before the door can open for us to enter the Permanent Court to resolve this dispute before a tribunal that will be formed by this institution, they needed to verify that the Hawaiian Kingdom, in fact, is a state and a non-contracting state, an existing state. Now, it's one thing to say the state exists, but how does the state speak? You need a government. And that's the Council of the Regency. And what came out of this case before the tribunal was formed in June of 2000. So from November 8th until November 8th, 1999 to June 9th, I believe, 2000, the Permanent Court of Arbitration had to verify whether or not the Hawaiian Kingdom exists as a state. And they did. And that's what allowed the tribunal to be formed with the consular regency representing the Hawaiian Kingdom as that state. So your listeners can Google Permanent Court of Arbitration, Larson versus Hawaiian Kingdom. And it will take you to a case repository at the website. And it specifically explains what the case was about. But next to Hawaiian Kingdom, it has state in parentheses.
As in not one of the 50 United States, but in nation state, independent.
Exactly. And that's why we have to keep in mind that what is governing our situation here with the United States is not American law, and Hawaii being the 50th state by the Statehood Act of 1959. It's international law that exists between states. So the only way that the 50th state can exist is that Hawaii had to have been transferred to the United States by a treaty of cession. That never happened.
That never happened.
Our ancestors killed it, right? That prompted them to just create a law saying, we annexed you. That didn't do anything, because if, in fact, that had any legal effect, the Permanent Court of Arbitration would have denied this dispute because Hawaii is the 50th state.
And are there other organizations that are taking notice of this history that you are revealing and educating people about?
Actually, three. One of the organizations is an organization of progressive attorneys, a bar association in the United States called the National Lawyers Guild.
Okay.
Another organization is an international body made up of jurists and attorneys in different countries called the International Association of Democratic Lawyers. And also another organization at the international level, the American Association of Jurists of Latin America. Now, the AAJ and the IADL, these international organizations, also have consultative status to the United Nations as a non-government organization or NGO. So the IADL and the NLG, I mean, sorry, the IADL and the AAJ are going to be submitting a written statement to the United Nations Human Rights Council that will be convening in Geneva on February 28th of next year, 2022.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's, and what's happening here is Hawaii's history is being understood by people who understand how the law works. This is not political. We are not supposed to go out and get and convince people of anything, because whether or not you're convinced, Hawaiian Kingdom still exists. So let's just speak to what the Hawaiian Kingdom is under international law, because that's where it sits. And that's what allows this information to permeate throughout the corners of the world, because Hawaii has treaties with Great Britain, Sweden, Norway, Germany, Switzerland, France, America. You know, we had over 90 embassies and consulates all over the world in 1893. That's not a colony.
No.
So we have to deal, first of all, with denationalization. That's a reality here in Hawaii. And that's why after we returned home from The Hague in the Netherlands, it was decided that we need to engage this false narrative. And the best way to engage this false narrative is to go to the root of that false narrative. And that's the University of Hawaii. So the Hawaiian Studies program at the University of Hawaii, the political science program at the University of Hawaii, all promote this false narrative of Hawaii being colonized, being indigenous people, being a tribal nation. That's a war crime. But they don't have intent, because they were just operating on what they were led to believe. Because I believe the same thing, because I had no reason to counter it. But now, after coming back from The Hague, this is not about trying to get to a world court. I came from a world court that verified we are still a country and we're occupied. And we're going to engage that false narrative. And that's why it was decided by the Council of Regency that since I had my bachelor's degree from the University of Hawaii in 1987, I know what they're teaching because mm-hmm. I took those classes. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to enter the political science department, get my master's degree specializing in international relations, and then my PhD. And I'm going to effect and engage the false narrative with accurate information. And that has led to a change of what we call discourse at the university.
Has it? I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. But you still have those that are fighting it.
Uh-huh.
But there's no basis for them to fight it. It's just ludicrous after a while, you know, because they feel that they've been outed. Mm-hmm. And especially for myself, being a native Hawaiian myself, they can't blame a racial side saying, oh, the Haole is doing this to me, or the Caucasian is doing this to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just saying what you are saying is incorrect. And you have a professional and ethical, and you have morals as a professional to stop teaching this, unless you can refute it, right? This is not like people off the street who just have an opinion. People at the university are teaching students, and these students are paying a tuition, and they should not be taught information that has already been rebuked, because that is a false narrative and that is unprofessional. So we had to apply this strategic plan that we put together, phase one, verification that the Hawaiian Kingdom exists as an independent state, not did exist, but exists. The Permanent Court of Arbitration got us past phase one. Phase two, exposure. And that would eventually lead to phase three, where the occupation will ultimately come to an end. So we're kind of in the middle of phase two, dealing with over 100 years of brainwashing. But the legality is one thing, but the awareness is another, because awareness does not prevent the legality from moving forward, because now that legality brings in accountability. And that's why what is at the forefront now are war crimes that can be qualified. And professors around the world have already jumped on board in writing pieces on this, on war crimes being committed in Hawaii by Professor William Chavez, Middlesex University, London. Professor Federico Lanzarini, University of Siena, Italy, human rights violations and self-determination of Hawaiian subjects. So it's spreading throughout the world, but we still have to focus on and maintain our due diligence with education. So that's why I still teach, graduate courses as well as undergraduate.
Well, I appreciate your work, and I hope that through this show, we can do a very small part to help spread the word, even if it's mostly here in Montana with people who may just visit. At least they'll understand more about the place that they're visiting. You've been listening to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM. We've been talking with Dr. Keanu Sai about the ongoing illegal occupation of Hawaii by the U.S. You can hear Body Politic at 1 p.m. on the first and third Monday of every month. Stream it live at kgvm.org, or check out the KGVM website to hear most Body Politic shows as podcasts. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Sai. Thank you so much for joining us. Aloha and mahalo.
Thank you. Aloha.